This week on Courageous Parenting, we connect again with Emery Luce Baldwin, licensed clinical marriage and family therapist with the state of Maryland and New York, as well as a certified parent educator with PEP. Emery is co-author of the book Parenting with Courage and Uncommon Sense, and formerly wrote regular parenting advice columns for The Voice newspapers and Washington Parent magazine. Emery was our guest on the initial Pandemic Parenting with PEP podcast, and so we connect with her now to see what she is seeing in her practice as families cautiously emerge from the pandemic parenting bubble. Welcome, Emery. It is great to have an opportunity to speak with you again. Last week we spoke was at the beginning of the pandemic, so 2.5 years ago. I'd say quite a few things have changed since then. What, in your experience as a therapist, what are you seeing now that we're kind of coming out of, hopefully, the worst of things as related to the pandemic?
I think right off the bat, one of the things that I'm seeing is, and this is like my own personal experience as well as what I see in my clients, is that it wasn't just a month or two and we're back into semi-normal life again. And so it's all in the past. I feel the reverberations of the shutdown still are continuing. People feel profoundly changed by their experiences, you know, for good or for not so good. And people are still kind of coming to terms with it all.
So when you say specifically with it all, what do you think in particular people are struggling coming to terms with?
Well, let me just back up one step there, Robbie, because one of the most fascinating things that I hear when I'm talking to my clients, particularly my younger clients, teens, when, you know, we went into lockdown, is that as they reflect on what that was like, it's not all negative memories. More than a few teens have said to me, it wasn't all bad. Something good came out of that for me. One young person I spoke to, who was only about 14 at the time, said that as, you know, when things sort of slowed down and not much was going on, she really appreciated that she had more time to kind of think and reflect and look at herself and look at her life, which is what a 14-year-old loves to do developmentally. Mm-hmm. But that she felt like it gave her a breathing space there to really kind of look at herself and figure out what she liked and what she didn't and about herself and what she wanted to change. And that's just one example that I've heard from several young people, that they don't consider it an entirely negative experience. They look back and they see that there were some good things about this pause, this breathing space, this kind of, the world kind of came to a stop and they just kind of were able to catch their breath. Obviously, it was not an entirely positive experience, but I just like to kind of respect that and appreciate that.
How about now that they don't have, you know, that time's gone again, they're back perhaps at that same pace that they were prior, or maybe not, but how are they feeling now?
Mixed feelings. I think there's the sense of what was lost, and I think young people are still grieving what was lost. You know, I remember a young man who said to me, I started high school and I was in high school for a few months and then we had the shutdown. Mm-hmm. And now I'm back in high school again and getting ready to graduate. What was that about? There's a sense of this enormous gap, and the things that they were hoping for, were looking forward to, were kind of excited about that was going to happen during those years, that was kind of taken away from them and they'll never get it back again. So there's grief, and I think everybody, young and old, is still kind of processing some of the grief from that today. And there's more than a few kids have said to me that they missed out on a time when they would have been working on something. Usually it's their interpersonal relationships, their social life. And that it was this, you know, the shutdown shut down their social lives. And that's really challenging to kind of get that started up again. Going back to school after a couple of years, well, I'm not the same person I used to be. My friends and, you know, my peers, they're not the same people they used to be either.
So what do you feel parents should know about that, about what their kids are going through, that start and stop, as well as kind of, you know, we're hearing a lot right now about the brain drain that kind of happened educationally, academically, but what should parents be aware of in terms of that interpersonal gap?
I think that it can be different for every kid, and mom or dad is looking at their children. It could be that each child may have had a different experience. Each child may have different things they missed out on. And so in a way, I think as for parents and parent educators and counselors like us, we look at the developmental roadmap. And when we, you know, we almost always have that in the back of our heads. What would, you know, what are the tasks of a typical 9-year-old? What's a 12-year-old usually working on? What's a 14-year-old usually trying to figure out for themselves? You know, what's a 16-year-old usually curious about and experimenting with and trying to find their way forward? And the roadmap is kind of scrambled, but the roadmap is still there. Mm-hmm. You know, every 11-year-old, 12-year-old needs to figure out friendship and needs to figure out how to be themselves and not sacrifice themselves within their friendship, and yet be willing to be flexible and compromise so they can have friendships, right? That's a really challenging balance to create. And 12, 13-year-olds are usually working their butts off on that and, you know, making mistakes, and friendships blow up, and then you figure it out and you get back on your feet and you keep going. So it may be your 14-year, 16-year-old missed out on that, and they still need to figure that out. So in a way, I think we sort of throw the calendar out the window and look at more each individual child. Where are they in their path? Where are they? What is it that isn't easy for them, is hard for them, is confusing or challenging for them? Well, that's their growing edge. That's where they need to be, is to be struggling with this next developmental stage and figuring it out and figuring out how to do it. And so in some ways, you know, our young teens can seem extra immature, or in other ways, they could, perhaps they've grown and developed in some areas, but there are still gaps in there. So it's a bit of that kind of back and forth stuff. And it's different for each child. For the shutdowns, it affected, you know, kids who were socially comfortable differently from the kids who were socially uncomfortable. It affected the kids who know how to organize themselves and manage their time. The kids who knew how to do that had one experience in shutdown and online learning. The kids who really hadn't gotten that together yet and relied on a lot of other kinds of support to stay organized and disciplined and motivated, with online learning, they didn't have that. Mm-hmm. So those are kids who have to kind of pick up where they left off. Every child doesn't want to be pushed or managed or bossed around, which means every child has the challenge of figuring out how to give themselves a push, how to manage themselves, and how to get themselves to get things done. That's kind of the task of work, of learning how to work and get things done and be productive. So there's so many things that are on a kid's to-do list growing up, and some of those things they were able to work on during COVID, and some of those things they just have to kind of go back and get back to work on it again.
So just overall, I'm kind of hearing the takeaways for parents are not everything was bad necessarily about the pandemic. We need to give our space for our kids to be honest and open about what they thought the benefits were, to be aware kind of developmental roadmap for each of their children, kind of being aware of what the tasks of that particular age would have been and looking to see where their kids kind of fall on that roadmap and where they might need some additional practice or support. And also just to recognize that every kid's different, even within a family, that temperament and other things will make it so it's not kind of a one-size-fits-all approach.
Exactly.
You know, so we have the pandemic, which is certainly a huge global issue, but then there's so much else going on in the world that kids these days are exposed to. Climate change, the war in Ukraine,
you know,
issues here in our own country, inflation, all those sorts of things. What recommendations do you have to parents regarding first ways to perhaps limit kids' exposure? You know, where should they be drawing the line and how? And in general, talking with their kids about these things. And I know that's incident specific, but are there any general guidelines?
I think it's definitely our role as loving, caring parents to protect our kids from getting overwhelmed and getting flooded with too much too soon before they're capable of dealing with it. Now that we've had a couple of decades of living in a 24/7 news stream, adults have been struggling with that and flooded. And adults, you know, we're the first generation of adults dealing with this, and it's not been easy for us, and our kids have never known anything different. So 25 years ago, we would advise parents, don't have, you know, all news radio on in the car all the time. Consider that children are interested and curious in the wider world, and you know, too much too soon is more than kids can handle. So then when we're talking about young and older teens, these are kids that are, you know, ages that are drawn like a magnet to what's going on in the world, because they are actively preparing themselves for the world they're going to be living in. And children, you know, themselves have to kind of learn how much is enough, how much is informative. And with the internet, I know schools emphasize this, and boy, it's incredibly valuable as parents that we're teaching children to listen with a skeptical ear, to not believe everything we see, to double check the sources and the backgrounds and the agendas of people who are sharing information on social media. You know, to be a skeptical, cautious consumer, I think is probably the most important job that we can do as parents. And to bring kids into conversations, maybe to touch upon our own experiences as adults, when we feel overwhelmed, when we feel beleaguered, when we feel like it's, you know, too much news, it's time to take a break. It's time to step away. It's time to do something different. Think about something different when you start to feel overwhelmed and discouraged by the news. That, I think, is something that we know we can bring to our own personal experiences and encourage our kids to figure out how much is enough and how much is too much, and how do you know the differences, and what do you do to kind of protect your emotional equilibrium. We can, you know, share with our kids, everybody has kind of a different setting. And it might depend on how your day is going and what else is going on in your life. A certain amount of stress is always going to be part of life. And when stress is stimulating, when stress is invigorating, when stress is even, you know, exciting, that's a productive amount of stress. But too much stress is paralyzing. We have a stress response. We want to either freeze or or run away, etc. And so it's another way of kind of taking our own temperature.
Mm-hmm.
Kids, I think, are also very familiar with this. You know, I think it's kids who came up with the expression doom scrolling.
Right.
Yeah. You're very upset or frightened about something, but you just can't stop reading about it. And we're living in a world where there's 24/7 an endless stream of information or new pictures, new stories, new descriptions of the same thing. It's not like the 30-minute network news program just ended and that's it for today, more tomorrow.
Right.
It never stops. So we learn how to stop it ourselves.
So the importance of parents even kind of modeling that and recognizing, you said, that stress response and helping our kids recognizing it in themselves. And from, so do they fight, flight, or freeze when they get to the level of too much stress? So modeling that and realizing that not every, just because it was on TikTok doesn't mean it's true.
To be another way that we protect ourselves is we determine, am I having a fright response because a spider just ran across the floor, or did I see something out of the corner of my eye and it was a toy spider? So we it's not as if this is the only thing that mm-hmm. we only do this with online news or social media, but we do it all the time in our lives. What's real, what's not real, what's significant, what's insignificant, what is reliable, what is, dicey and probably not the real thing. And so I think we just expand that, judgment to online information and use the internet for the useful tool that it is, but do it with a sense of, I manage the internet. The internet doesn't manage me.
Right. What a great way of looking at that. This is stuff that doesn't just apply to electronics. It applies outside of that as well.
Yeah.
Never really thought of it that way. So there's been a lot of focus on mental health recently, and some of the things we've already talked about, the pandemic, technology, world events are projected as possible contributors to our recent state of mental health. I read a LinkedIn survey. It said global unhappiness is on the rise, is continued to be on the rise. 1 in 4 ER visits were attributed to mental health issue versus a physical health issue. So what can parents do for themselves if they are finding themselves a little kind of mentally or emotionally imbalanced? And what can they help their kids, or how can they help their kids?
We know from history that the world has always been an unpredictable and a sometimes dangerous and scary place. Human beings have got, tens of thousands of years of living with this and figuring out how to keep going. And so what we want to do as parents, I think, is prepare them for the real world that they're growing up to live in, to work in, to build a life for themselves in. And what kids are learning at home with their families is how their parents do it, which gives them a template. It gives them an idea of how it can be done. So when you ask, how can parents find their own balance? I think that's a terrific place to start. When parents are kind of actively making efforts to manage their own stress, to balance the, multiple demands in their life. And kids can see that, especially if parents are sort of talking about it. And then once, when we appreciate that in our own lives, looking at our kids and do they have a sense of balance in their lives? We know that many kids have their lives, every hour of their lives, programmed from virtually the moment they wake up to the moment they go to bed. And for some kids, that works just great, but not every kid and not every time. So if you know, if your child's emotional needs and developmental needs are changing, let's be flexible. I think being more flexible is a way of responding to where a kid's abilities are and what their needs are, and helping them see that they too can make adjustments, that they can be flexible, that they can kind of respond to situations as situations change. And change their own personal expectations of how busy or not so busy they really need to be.
Parents being sure they put their oxygen masks on first is the best kind of way of describer of what you talked about with regards to parents, that they making sure they take the time to meet some of their mental and emotional needs. And also with kids, you brought up interesting, yes, every minute of every day structured and filled. And I think what I'm guilty of this as a parent, what this ended up producing was young adults who don't really know how to be still and quiet. And especially, like you said, whether it's 24/7 bombardment, it's not like back in the old days where at midnight, the Star Spangled Banner played on the TV and there were no channels to watch. We had built-in opportunities for stillness and quiet and kind of internal brainstorming, as you will. And this generation hasn't had those built-in opportunities too. Do you find that? And do you feel that parents also should kind of help their kids, perhaps somewhat through modeling of their own, but also just helping us understand that, we can be still and quiet and not have something going on at all times, because sometimes that's, where we hear our intuition.
Yes. I think it's challenging for parents. I think we have to look at ourselves and kind of check some of our own assumptions at the door. Because one of our assumptions, a very common assumption for parents, is a child who doesn't have anything to do is a child who's wasting their time or getting into trouble. And I don't think that's true. I think children need time when there's nothing that they have to do. I think children and adults need downtime. They need breaks. Because let's face it, Robbie, what do people do when they don't have built-in breaks and permission and encouragement and support for just relaxing, chilling, finding something fun to do that's not productive, it's not for a grade, it's not for a score, it's not for a trophy, it's just because it's nice. And what do parents say all the time? My kid is on the phone. My kid is, they would be so much more productive if they weren't always checking their messages or texting their friends or playing a game. Well, I have a slightly different viewpoint of that. When I look at and hear about what kids' schedules are like and what their lives are like, I actually want to sit back and applaud and say, good for you that you do not want to succumb to a life that is nothing but work and productivity from dawn to dusk. Good for you that you take a break, you let your mind rest, you let your mind, your imagination wander, that you indulge yourself by painting your fingernails or taking the dog for a walk or getting in the bubble bath or hanging out with a friend. And is there anything to show for that? No. Good. Not every moment of the day is supposed to be productive. Your imagination got to get some exercise. Your blood pressure, your stress responses relaxed and returned to a better, equilibrium. You are literally bringing your not just your mind and your emotions, but your body into balance when you rest and relax. And I don't think children are meant to only relax when they're asleep. Educational psychologists, people who study how learning happens and what interferes with learning and how to increase learning and all those kinds of things. What they have found is it's that the rest period for the mind is absolutely vital for the active period of the brain to be effective and to be working.
And by rest, you also mean, though, off of their electronics, or would you consider that to be restful?
I think it's one kind of restful.
Okay.
I think it's one kind of restful, because if a kid picked up a newspaper and spent 30 minutes reading the comics, doing the crossword puzzle, checking their horoscope, and seeing what Dear Abby had to say, mm-hmm. that's kind of what you're doing on your phone, but it wouldn't look so bad because you're doing it on with a newspaper.
Right.
And so I think within reason, entertaining, checking in on your friends, asking the internet a question about something you were curious about, readings about some celebrity, you know, it's brain candy. It's right. brain candy. And it's, to me, that's okay. And honestly, I have grown much, much more understanding and respectful of that, because the kids that I am talking to, which are often stressed and anxious and sad children, when I say, what do you do to relax? What do you do for fun? What are your hobbies? These are kids who don't have time to do that.
Right.
But they're sneaking it in wherever they can, and which is a few minutes here or there. I get to, you know, I go into the bathroom with my phone.
Right. Well, yes. Right. Adults do it as well. And I know for me, it's having to be very intentional and conscious about not just pulling it out when there's a down moment, trying to be mindful and sit quietly, at least for a minute or two, because sometimes I have to kind of check in with, okay, what am I feeling that's making me feel like I have to pull up my phone right now? And that's something I try to encourage other young folks to do. Just before you just do that, think, okay, am I doing this because I'm bored, or I'm feeling left out, or I'm feeling lonely, or check mm-hmm. in first before doing that. Because the other thing about it is sometimes it can just exacerbate that feeling. So if you are coming to it from a place of loneliness, and then you start scrolling your social media and you see this group of friends doing that and this group of friends here and that, whatever, it's just going to make that sense of loneliness worse. Last question, Emery, for those parents who are concerned either about, you know, kind of their own state of mental health or their children's, lots been said about the need for mental health providers. How do you recommend parents go about finding professional help if they feel the need for it, for either them or their kids?
Well, there are lots of resources, of course, to find counselors and therapists. And I understand that it can be hard to get an appointment with counselors or therapists, that there are long waiting lists and the demand is greater than the supply. But as human beings, we're designed to find comfort by sharing our experiences with other people, interested and non-judgmental and supportive. We're talking about friendship. We're talking about finding somebody who it's okay to lean on a bit and offer that in return, that you're a comforting shoulder to lean on or to cry on as well. And so if you don't have enough time in your life to find, nurture, and strengthen connections with other people, but you're feeling sad and lonely, scared, or worried, this might be a sign that this would be a good time to make this more of a priority. Friendships are built on lots of different ways of reciprocating, and that's sharing our problems is just one of them. So even sort of thinking of the skill of how to go about sharing personal stuff, and that is, you just do the friendly check-in, that we can ask permission. We can let somebody know, I've been going through something, or I'm worried or wondering about something, and I'd love to talk it out. Would you be willing to hear me out? I think that's almost always available to us if we are willing to look for it and find it and nurture the friends that we can support them and they can support us too. So that's one thing that, for many people, COVID interrupted our social connections. And there was just that acute sense of isolation and loneliness. And I'll say, as speaking as somebody who I identify as an extroverted person, and I felt I became more introverted than I'd ever been in my life. And sort of reconnecting and meeting up with and spending time with friends again, it has not been automatic or easy.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's really intriguing to me. I'm still sort of puzzling that out.
It's almost like it's a use it or lose it muscle, I found, because it was underused for so long that, yes, I get exhausted.
I'd love to understand that better. Yeah.
But also it's recognition, though, that we're not the only ones feeling this way, and realizing we can reach out, taking that initiative and not always waiting for somebody else to do it.
Yes. There's a psychologist named Daniel Siegel, and he's wrote something that I read that's really resonated and stuck with me. And that is, you know, as human beings, we experience our lives through our emotions. And also as human beings, we don't fully have a sense of understanding what our experience is until we've shared it. So if I see the most gorgeous sunset I've ever seen tonight, and I stand there and I look at it and I drink it in, the experience won't feel fully complete to me until I share what it was like to see that sunset with somebody else who I know will appreciate it and want to hear me. That's what connects that cycle of experience. So if we feel that way about beautiful sunsets or a movie I saw or, you know, a poem I read, that has to be true as well for our other life experiences, the good ones and the not so good ones.
You know, it's interesting you say that. I did this program called Write from the Heart, where someone would kind of read a poem prompt, and then you would free write for a designated period of time, like 10 or 15 minutes. And then we each would share what we wrote. And it was fascinating to me. I could write something, but then sharing it, reading it, the emotions that it evoked, it was a whole different experience. So that definitely resonates with me, what you said about sharing. Yes, you feel it. It imprints on you in a completely different way. And I think intensifies the emotions around it.
Yeah.
If parents feel like they need additional support for their children, are there any particular resources that you suggest?
Well, on the theme of friendship, as a family therapist who works primarily with young adolescents and older adolescents and young adults, I would love to beg every parent out there to please understand, appreciate, and support children's needs for friendship. The power of good friendships in their lives and the tremendous loss and grief when kids don't have good friendships in their lives. It's hard to be a teen. Mm-hmm. And the kids who have a close group of friends have a buffer. It gives them this powerful emotional buffer. Your friends always have your back. They always see your point of view, and they always support you and love you. And I appreciate, you know, as a mom myself, you know, raising a couple of kids, being in the other room and listening to the conversation going on out there in the family room or in the back of the car or whatever, it doesn't sound like quality time. It sounds like goofing off, trash talking, being silly, getting obsessed about nonsensical things. But that's where kids are making the connection. They feel at home. They feel safe and comfortable. They feel loved and appreciated. That's what gives kids this wonderful emotional buffer that helps, that just kind of soaks up the tough times, the rough times, the bad days. And it's what keeps kids afloat.
All right. Well, thank you. As always, great information, great insights, and I appreciate you taking the time. How would people reach you if they're interested in working with you?
Oh, thank you. I would suggest people go to my website.
Okay. We'll have your website in the show notes. Again, Emery, thank you so much. Always a pleasure.
My appreciation too. Thank you very much for inviting me. I enjoyed the conversation.
We'd like to thank Emery for her insights today.
To learn more about her, you can visit her website at emoryluceballdwin.com. That's EmoryLuceBaldwin.com. To learn more about PEP, please visit pepparent.org to access many more parenting resources, including articles, blog posts, and the schedule of PEP's online course offerings and webinars on a wide variety of parenting subjects. If you'd like to financially contribute to PEP, you can do so by clicking on the Donate tab on our homepage. PEP is a 501c3 nonprofit organization, so your contributions are tax deductible. We greatly appreciate your support. If you have questions or suggestions for future episodes, please send an email to podcast@pepparent.org. Thank you again for joining. And remember, parenting requires the courage to be imperfect. PEP is here to help provide you with that courage.